Welcome to Chapels from Rosedale Bible College. Thanks for joining our community for weekly chapels recorded on our campus in Rosedale, Ohio. We hope you are challenged and inspired by what you hear. Enjoy.
Good morning. What a pleasure it is to be with you again for this final session in this week. I just want to make sure I say a few things that have been part of my experience here this week. And to all of you students, in 2017 when I joined the board, we could not have imagined that we would be here today. We couldn't have imagined that we would have this many students. Well, actually we did imagine, that's why we moved forward. But our hope was that this experience would continue to grow for many, many of you. And lo and behold, here you are this morning, and we've seen the work that we did as a board come to fruition, and the staff here are amazing. And so I hope that you get a glimpse of what is really true about your Rosedale experience and how it will form you for the rest of your life. Because it really will if you allow it to. I got a chance to sit back here in the back this morning as Phil was teaching the Genesis class. And if you're not in the Genesis class, I think you ought to be because it's pretty interesting. And he even plays music for you at times and analyzes that music with you. So it's just a joy to be here. I love Phil. I love all of the staff here. It's just been, I've had a lot of time to be part of some of what happens here, and I'm just really grateful this morning. So I wonder, what time is it? It's about 14 hours into your assignment. You've got 34 to go before the 48 hours are up. Do you remember the assignment from last night? The assignment is, if you weren't here, it's you're monitoring your conversations to see if you can keep yourself from speaking unkind words about yourself and others for the next, well, now 34 hours. So I don't know how you're doing so far. And maybe as you slept, you even forgot that there was an assignment. But I would just continue to challenge you to be monitoring your conversations. The tongue, as we know, is a powerful tool for good and sometimes for bad. This morning, I have entitled the message, Strength Minus Flex Equals Power. Let's see if we've got it. There we go. Strength minus flex. So strength, humility, minus pride equals power. Humility minus pride equals power. So we're going to be in James chapter 4, but before we get there, I want to review for just a minute because there is a direct relationship between the end of James 3 and the first 10 verses of James 4, where he doesn't introduce a new topic, but he marks a shift. So in James 3, there's a contrast established between earthly wisdom and heavenly wisdom. And in chapter 4, James now exposes what happens when we choose the wrong kind of wisdom. So here we go, James chapter 3, starting in verse 13, just as a review. If you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and every evil thing. You will find disorder and every evil of every kind. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. And finally, in verse 18, peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. Got any farmers in the room? Yeah, a few. You got a few farmers in the room. Well, you know that harvest requires a certain climate. So around here, we're in the Midwest. We're a corn belt. We're in corn belt states. Soils are deep and fertile and rich in organic material and nitrogen. And the land is relatively level. I was reminded of how level the fields are out here as the wind blew through us, literally through us, the last couple days. The warm nights, hot days, and rainfall of this region are ideal conditions for raising corn. So you also may have heard the phrase knee-high by 4th of July. That is easily happening in the Midwest. A crop of righteousness, so let's translate this now. A crop of righteousness is grown in a climate of peace. A climate of peace. It has to be sown and cultivated by those of us who are peacemakers. Righteousness can't grow. It can't be produced in a climate of bitterness and self-seeking. It only grows in a climate of peace and grace. So peacemakers create an atmosphere. We create a climate where Psalm 58 or 85 calls it, unfailing love and truth meet together where righteousness and peace kiss. So how do we live wisely, and what are the implications of choosing earthly instead of heavenly kind of wisdom? Maybe the better question is, why would we choose earthly wisdom instead of heavenly wisdom? And James asks a similar question as he now makes a shift from atmosphere to anatomy, from what surrounds us to what's warring deep inside of us. So James chapter 4, verse 1, what is causing the quarrels and fights among you? Don't they come from the evil desires at war within you? Now, in just a couple verses, we'll see that James is pointing us to the core issue, which is pride. So let's begin this exhuming, if you will, of what does, how does pride show up? How does pride show up in our lives? Don't they come from evil desires at war within you, these quarrels and fights? Pride often shows up, here's the first one, in the way of fear. Fear. Pride is at the root of fear and anxiety. See, fear reveals our lack of trust and our propensity towards self-reliance. We fear because we don't believe that God really has our back. Fear is what we capitulate to when the control we long for keeps slipping through our grasp, when our desires are self-centered and unfulfilled. So the Greek word for desires is the source of the English word hedonism. Hedonism describes a philosophy that views pleasure as the chief goal of life. This comes at the expense of all else. My pleasure, my desires, the unmitigated push towards self-indulgence doesn't this cause the chaos and destruction that follows in the wake of pride and arrogance? John writes this in 1 John 2. He says, for everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. So pride of life. It's living in a way that is undisciplined, giving in to everything and anything that gratifies our base human appetite. Everything. And so what often happens in our relationships is that they end up going very wrong. And the root of all these problems, all these troubles, is misplaced desires. This is the pride of life. What begins as desire now quietly shifts into entitlement. And entitlement always leads to war. Verse 2, you want what you don't have, so you scheme and kill to get it. You are jealous of what others have, but you can't get it, so you fight and wage war to take it away from them. So the second way that pride shows up is entitlement. I think we think we deserve God's mercy. We think we deserve people's praise. We think we deserve love, success, comfort, accolades. We certainly don't think we deserve suffering. We certainly don't think we deserve heartbreak or discipline. But when we do experience these things, we have a tendency, instead of embracing what is and figuring out, okay, how do I live into this? What am I to learn? We instead grow bitter. We grow frustrated, don't we? We get disturbed because we believe we're entitled to more. The disciples wrestled with this too. They wrestled with entitlement many times. And on one occasion, if you remember, they were arguing about who was the greatest. They selfishly thought that they deserved honor and glory, but Jesus' response to them was a rebuke. In Luke 22, he said, rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as one who serves. These were the words of Jesus, and still we fight and we wage war. Now, again, James can come across as rather confrontational and harsh, because when we hear the vocabulary of war, we probably don't resonate with that in terms of like war as it relates to me, because it's easy for us to think that the terminology is just simply overstated. Our small-time disagreements and occasional squabbles surely wouldn't fit the description of war, of fighting, and of murder. And actually, Jesus has a different opinion about that. In Matthew 5, he says these words. He says, so if you are presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar, go and be reconciled to the person, and then come and offer your sacrifice to God. If something comes to mind, it doesn't need to be a big, bad, terrible thing. Just something. If something comes to mind. You and I, we tend to diminish the importance of right relationships. That's so easy, especially as we come to church, and maybe it's just an hour a day. And so we smile at the wrong sort of tolerance over a touchy and difficult brother or sister. We shrug our shoulders over two who have fallen out. We tolerate the wars within and without. We just shrug our shoulders over fighting. But how did Jesus say we would be known? Was it not he that taught us that love covers all, that we would be known by our love, that how we love is proof of our citizenship in heaven? Verse 2 continues, yet you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it. And even when you ask, you don't get it because your motives are wrong. You want only what will give you pleasure. You don't have because you don't ask. Even prayer is ineffectual because whatever God would give would be spent on our passions. We ask with selfish motives. So then prayer is blocked and communication is strained. Now, pleasures are morally neutral, except that in the natural, if we are left to our own devices, our own self-absorbed desires, our strong longings, if we just let them run rampant without any discretion, they're going to breed and multiply until they become accepted practice. And so then, we end up with situations which we see in our world right now, where wrong is right and right is wrong, because we've determined that above all, we must experience pleasure at no matter the cost. All our desires and passions are like an armed camp within us, ready at a moment's notice to declare war on anyone who stands in the way of the personal gratifications we've set our hearts on. Which leads us to the third way that pride shows up. It shows up in ingratitude. Pride says, we're good, that we should get what we want, and if we don't, we're justified in our lack of gratitude. God just didn't come through. If we're uncomfortable or inconvenienced in any way, we can complain because it's our right. Humility, however, recognizes that God is good, that he gives us what he knows we need, so we have no reason to be ungrateful. Paul in Philippians 2 rebukes us and our proud grumbling with this command. He says, do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent children of God, without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. We can be lights in the world if we will be lights in the world. Verse 4 of James 4. You adulterers. You adulterers. Now, James is again reminding us that he's talking to, his audience at that time was the Jewish believers. And they knew what he meant when he said, you adulterers. They were reminded of the time when Israel broke covenant with God and pursued idols. God charged her with adultery. Don't you realize that friendship with the world makes you an enemy of God? I say it again, if you want to be a friend of the world, you make yourself an enemy of God. Verse 5, do you think the scriptures have no meaning? They say that God is passionate, that the spirit he has placed within us should be faithful to him. Now, this is the most sobering shift yet. He moves from friendship with the world and suggesting and telling us that this is not neutral. It becomes opposition to God. He moves from what is causing the quarrels and fights among you to open hostility now and in opposition to God. So let's parse this out a little bit. Friendship with the world means that we align ourselves with the systems of the world. When we align ourselves, it means we come into agreement with. It means we have a warm, familiar attitude toward it. It means that we are on good terms, even giving preference to the demonic in order to be on good terms with the opposition, the enemy of God. It is to adopt the world's set of values and to want what the world wants. And by the way, we need to be aware that the world is not just anyone who believes differently than our particular stream of Christianity. The world is also, we're talking about systems of the world. And sometimes we get caught up in thinking about the people of the world. Yes, the people of the world make up the systems of the world. However, James is not pointing to individuals that we connect with. We have to keep asking, who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? Who needs me to come along? Who is God calling me to come alongside? Sometimes we're like, yeah, but they're in the world. They're not living according to the standards that I embrace. Our responsibility is to keep communicating the gospel of Jesus to those around us. And unless we insert ourselves into the spaces with people who don't yet believe, until we find our neighbors, until we really take seriously what God is calling us to, we remain cocooned, and often we don't grow spiritually because we don't move out of the places we're comfortable. And so I'm very much against embracing the systems of the world. I am very much for coming into relationship with those who perhaps do already embrace the systems of the world. We must be able to show a different way. And we can't do that very well when we're cocooned and keeping to just those people who believe like we do. Fourthly, how does pride show up? It shows up as rebellion. Rebellion against God looks like resistance toward the word and the spiritual leaders he's placed in our lives. It is the reflex of a prideful heart. It also shows itself in a lack of submission, like mutual submission between husband and wife, children to the parents, employees to employers, and citizens to the government. Rebellion says, I know better, better than those I am accountable to, even better than God. Just like Adam and Eve, even though they had all they needed for life and joy, out of pride, they rebelled against God's goodness because they knew better than him. Their rebellion has brought pain, suffering, and death for them and for all of humanity. And now in verse 6, James makes the most hopeful shift of all, from confrontation to invitation, and he gives us these words. He says he's pointing to Jesus, he gives grace generously. As the scriptures say, and then he quotes Proverbs 3, God opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble. Here's what I want you to do. Here's what James is calling for. He isn't calling for behavior modification. It's a shift in posture. It's a shift in posture. Verse 7, so humble yourself. That's the first thing he calls us to. Humble yourself before God. Resist the devil. That's number 2. And he will flee from you. Come close to God. That's number 3. And God will come close to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts. Number 5. For your loyalty is divided between God and the world. Let there be tears for what you have done. Let there be sorrow and deep grief. Let there be sadness instead of laughter and gloom instead of joy. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up in honor. There's a promise throughout Scripture about being lifted up when we humble ourselves. God will lift us up. When we lay aside pride, when we allow ourselves to be humbled, this is not a smooth and painless process, but it is, I believe, our rescue. It is our rescue. In the meantime, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 13 that now we see things imperfectly, like puzzling reflections in a mirror. But then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All that I know now is partial and incomplete, but then I will know everything completely, just as God knows me completely. When we choose the chaos of earthly wisdom instead of the purity and peace of heavenly wisdom, we don't have clarity. We don't see clearly. All of us use windshield wipers on our cars, right? Have you had a windshield wiper, a set of windshield wipers, who just couldn't get the windshield clean? And they're expensive. Windshield wipers are not cheap. So I had one of those recently. And so I looked for a life hack. Here it is. Buy some cheap WD-40 if you don't have any. Spray it on a rag and clean your wipers. And lo and behold, you've got almost a new set of wipers. You get that grime and dirt off. That's just a freebie. That's a life hack. You can use that one. College students need those kind of tips, right? I put that WD-40 on those wipers, and all of a sudden, I had clarity. I could actually see out of my windshield. The same is true for us. If we want clarity in our lives, we must exercise heavenly wisdom. Heavenly wisdom that gives us clarity about the life we're to lead. When we get that clarity about the kind of wisdom we're practicing, like when we get honest about the kind of wisdom we're practicing, when we see things for what they really are, when we get perspective, we find that there is so much hope for pride in our proud hearts. This is where humility creates a shift from distortion to clarity, from chaos to peace. This is where we take on the mind of Christ, who, though he was in the form of God, didn't count equality with God something to be grasped, but emptied himself, which means he humbled himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. Jesus, he pulls us out of pride. Jesus, the one who deserved the highest place, walked away from it to rescue us. See, pride doesn't have to own us if we're willing to change. That willingness to change, though, requires us to put to death the evil desires that war within us. When we do this, we will be peacemakers that our world so desperately needs. We will be those people who will create an atmosphere, a climate, where the unfailing love and truth meet together, and where righteousness and peace meet and kiss. This is the hope that we have as followers of Jesus, that when we embrace heavenly wisdom, when we ask the right questions, when we get clarity, when we're curious about why we do the things that we do, the answers lie in allowing the Holy Spirit to do his work and to speak to us, and for us to have ears that hear. Would you stand? We're getting you out early this morning, but I do want to just give you this invitation. You know, James, the first four chapters, actually all of James, is hard-hitting. And we can either hear these words and we can choose to grow and choose to embrace the truth of the gospel, or we can walk away from these days and we can feel all kinds of heaviness about the way we're not measuring up, because he does give us some clear instructions for life. But again, we've talked about choosing. What are the choices we're going to make? What are the decisions we're going to make? How will we live? Because we get to decide. And so we can either carry this sense of, I'm just not measuring up, or we can understand that the Spirit of God in us gives us the power to live rightly, gives us the power to embrace heavenly wisdom, to be the people who will create an atmosphere of peace and grace. And I am completely convinced that that is our charge as people of God, to be people of grace and peace, to embrace love, and to speak truth. And we can do both. We can both speak truth, and we can be people of peace and grace.
Thanks for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please share so others can benefit from it as well. And be sure to check out our other podcasts at rosedale.edu/podcasts.